Annie Fuller leaned across to stare at the woman's hands resting palms up on the dark green velvet tablecloth in front of her. She picked up the right hand and slowly traced the client's heart, head, and lifelines, struggling to find some words of comfort to extract from these faint creases that crisscrossed Mrs. Crenshaw's plump palms. Stalling, she picked up the left hand. She turned the hand over, noting that the gold wedding band and modest diamond engagement ring were becoming embedded in the flesh of the ring finger, and that the hand was cold and dry. "You're still having trouble breathing, aren't you, Mrs. Crenshaw? Did you try the extra pillow as I suggested last week?" asked Annie.
"Oh, yes, Madam Sybil, I did, and just as you foretold, have slept so much easier,"
Mrs. Crenshaw replied. Annie glanced up, sudden suspicion sharpening her voice. "You did return to see Dr. Hammersmith, didn't you? Remember what I told you, the science of palmistry is not incompatible with the science of human physiology. What I learned from reading your palms and what Dr. Hammersmith learns from listening to your heart with his stethoscope can both be of use to you." Mrs. Silas Crenshaw, a fashionably dressed woman in her late 60s, turned her head away for a moment. She then sighed and said,
"I saw him, but he doesn't do me any good. He just tells me to be patient. He says a woman my age shouldn't expect to come back quickly from a bout of pneumonia. What he won't tell me is when I can travel to Iowa to meet my new grandbaby. You know how I long to see my daughter and that precious child. He will be 6 months old in December. My husband is quite determined we should wait until my cough is entirely gone, and Dr. Hammersmith refuses to advise him that I am well enough to travel. So I need you to tell me what is going to happen. There are arrangements to be made. Mr. Crenshaw can't just leave for a month at a moment's notice. Please, when will I be well enough to visit my daughter?"
Annie turned Mrs. Crenshaw's hand back over to trace her mercury line, which, if she really did believe in palmistry, would reveal information about Mrs. Crenshaw's future health. Annie, however, didn't believe in palmistry, and it didn't take clairvoyance to tell her that the woman in front of her was unlikely to get well enough to spend Christmas in Iowa with her new grandson. But clairvoyance is what Madam Sybil promised in her newspaper advertisement, and clairvoyance is what Mrs. Crenshaw expected for her $2 fee. This was a problem, since Annie Fuller, in addition to being a respectable widow and boarding house owner, was also Madam Sybil. After her husband John's death, she had spent 5 wretched years being shunted between various branches of his family back east, finally coming west to settle in San Francisco, where she had inherited a house from her only remaining blood relative, her Aunt Agatha. Despite turning this grand old home into a boarding house, she found she still wasn't financially independent. Aunt Annie had turned to the only other way of making a living she knew, giving business advice. Although she had been trained by her father, one of the most successful stockbrokers in New York or San Francisco history, Annie had discovered the only way a 26-year-old female was going to get paid for her knowledge and expertise was if she pretended she got her information from reading her clients' palms or casting their horoscopes. Hence the invention of her alter ego, Madam Sybil. She had added domestic advice to Madam Sybil's offerings, hoping she would also attract female clients. For the last year, she had been gratifyingly successful in not only helping a number of local businessmen begin to recoup their losses from the panic and depression of the 70s, but also helping a number of women better manage their household finances, their domineering mothers-in-law, and their neglectful husbands. Mrs. Crenshaw, however, was different, and with each visit, Annie felt increasingly uncomfortable with the charade she was playing. The wig of intricate black curls she wore as part of her Madam Sybil disguise felt unbearably tight and hot. Normally, the small parlor in which she and Mrs. Crenshaw sat, with its velvet curtains and dim lighting, provided an inviting haven of coolness, but not today. As it was nearly noon, the fog had burned off, and although it was the middle of October, the unusual heat of early fall persisted. The incipient headache that had hovered all morning finally attacked as Annie anxiously searched for an appropriate answer to Mrs. Crenshaw's question.